I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
Don't adjust your phone, your radio, whatever the hell you've got on. It is two episodes in a week for Break It Down. I'm Alex McCarthy. Kenny McIntosh as well is in the house, and we have plenty to talk about. The Rock is on the board of directors of TKO. WrestleMania plans allegedly leaked by Justin Barrasso and co. We have a lot to dive into.
Raw to Netflix.
Christ. That's in 2025. Who cares? No, we care. We do care. We're going to jump into all of that on the show tonight. And we're going to hear from SmackDown GM Britain's own Nick Aldis to close the show, the main event, if you will. Kenny, we're going to start with The Rock because I'm the presenter and I said so. I love The Rock, and he is now not only main eventing WrestleMania 40, he's on the board with TKO. I felt like he was going to get up on stage and say, Kenny McIntosh, this one's for you, brother.
You know, nothing sounds better than a guy getting $30 million in shares, a seat on the board, and then he comes in and takes the main event away from a guy who's supposed to finish his story. What a pro!
I saw Cody say in an interview, I don't think The Rock is going to come and screw something that's been building for 2 years. Well, you should think again, Cody. You know the business well. What's going on?
And the thing is, like, I mean, I'll just get into this straight away because it's on my mind. Like, we talked about this last week, and I get it. Like, the reasons that it's a box office match, I understand. You don't need to convince me or tell me that I'm stupid because I don't see the big picture. I get all that. I just think, you know, WWE 10 years ago, and I do think Triple H, if the leaked card is correct, has actually done better than Vince would have done in this scenario. But it's like, you know, we lived through that part-timer era, and Rock was a big part of that. And he ruined a lot of shit because he came in and just, you know, CM Punk in 2013 probably should have been the main event at WrestleMania, not the rematch of those two that we didn't need to see a rematch of. I mean, I was there live in New York for that match and it was excruciating. Mm. It was so long. It was so tedious.
Anyway, even I, as The Rock's biggest fan, and funnily enough, my best friend Joe, he was like a huge CM Punk fan. And when I got back into wrestling around 2010, he was like his biggest proponent. And we were arguing at the time. I was like, well, The Rock's back. Like, who cares, you know? And then, yeah, similarly to my outlook now. And it wasn't till a few years removed. And then I think after Punk had left and stuff, I was like, yeah, I think they fucked that. I will say
something surprising that you like. People may be surprised to hear me say this, and I'm not joking when I say this. It's going to sound like I'm making a joke. If it's Rock and Roman, and that's the match. Rock should beat him. Like, yeah. Let's do it. I do not care about Roman Reigns.
I get this from you. I know you said he was stale on the last episode, right?
I wrong?
No. I'm just prying into your thought process.
Well, do you know what?
I agree. I'm just saying, like.
I think that the reason
you not
I think
this is the kind of storyline that does inject life, though.
No, 100% it does. But the thing is, so let's say they do this storyline, right? And let's say they do 10 out of 10 amazing storytelling in this story leading up to WrestleMania, right? The thing is, after WrestleMania, we are still stuck with no more Rock. Maybe they put Jey Uso back in the bloodline with, you know, to kind of beef up a bit again. You've then got a kind of summer period where we're kind of going to have the rest of the bloodline again trying to be there for Roman. And I'm just kind of over it. Like, I'm just... And, you know, maybe there is stuff they can do to inject it. I can't speak for that. But for now, I mean, I remember when, you know, after Money in the Bank, I was there at SummerSlam, and SummerSlam was a good show. And then the Jey Uso Roman Reigns match, and it didn't really deliver, I think, the way that people thought it was going to. And then I think since then, it's just kind of been really devoid of any memorable moments, and the first 7 months of the year was full of them. Like, they were constant. It felt every kind of second week, third week, you had this big bloodline moment that felt like it was going to be replayed in a highlight package. And then they went to Crown Jewel and had that match with LA Knight, and I remember watching the match and just going, oh, it's a formula now. For me, it was just like, now, like, before I could always kind of not have, I didn't think about it. I mean, I knew the formula was there, but like, it wasn't on my mind. But in the LA Knight match, I felt like it was very at the front of my mind that there was this formula. And, you know, I think the four ways are interesting because Randy Orton's back and he's... But I mean, I don't think I'm interested in it really that much because of Roman Reigns. So, but I mean, maybe the Rock stuff is going to breathe new life into Roman. But I mean, you know, you're the better person to ask, right? Because you're the big Rock fan. You know, I feel like The Rock could murder someone. You go, well, you know, the guy might deserve it.
Well, what did the guy do?
What did the guy do? Context is key. But like, so do you think that is Roman beating Rock and us going back to part-time Roman, is that satisfying? Or is there a scenario where Rock could win?
Yeah. Like I said, I wouldn't rule it out just because of the way The Rock scene played out. And The Rock talks about being a long gamer. He likes to keep bringing this up as if, you know, a show in 3 months' time isn't the be-all and end-all to him. And, of course, he is on the board now. You know, basically, he's intrinsically linked to the success of both WWE and UFC. And one might think that might be a crutch for the company in some ways, right? Leading into the Netflix era, I mean, would you be surprised if The Rock was champion? I'm not saying he should be or will be, but it's not out. You know, that's like a Vince McMahon thought. Right.
Well, there's also the element of, you know, the kind of stories out there of, you know, what if Saudi chucked loads of money at them? So, you know, does Rock win?
Well,
it?
If they request The Rock and The Rock's like, you know, he's part of the company again now, like properly.
Yeah. So maybe if they do that, I mean, maybe Rock wins it at Mania and then he drops it in Saudi Arabia. Maybe that's what they do.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, the only thing that I've heard The Rock talk about how he wants to put over Roman. And one would think, given what Hogan did for him once upon a time, that The Rock would do for Roman. That just seems like elementary. That should be a given.
Yeah.
Talking about what happens after, like my general opinion is us as wrestling fans spend far too long going, well, what about what you do with this person after here? And then what about this? In reality, you should build the biggest, like, hard, ideally, but obviously the match, you're meant to deliver the biggest match you can on the biggest show in the biggest slot. That should be, everything else after that is kind of secondary, and then you build again and you start afresh, however you want to do. I don't see there being any good arguments of, But what about what this person can do, et cetera, because none of that will equate to what you've got here. The end goal of this business is to make the biggest money matches you can possibly make. If you have one right in front of you, you don't go, well, what if we don't finish? I was about to throw a random name out there, like, you know, Kofi King, you know, whatever. What if this person doesn't get their run and finish what they've been doing on Raw for the last 3 months? Hmm. It doesn't really matter. It doesn't. Like, it, I mean, it, like I said in the last show, it does to a degree.
But but here's where we are counteract that with it, right? So that's all fair enough, and they should build to the biggest match. But I don't think that the audience should then be left with 4 months of pedestrian programming for that.
No, ideally not. The onus is on WWE for that, right? Like, they've got enough talent to make it work.
Also, like, what, I mean, I don't mean this is a shady thing to say. It's going to sound shady because I'm saying it more for effect that way, but like, what is Roman doing?
Yeah, like, he's just enjoying life.
Like, he couldn't come to SmackDown every 2 weeks. Like, he couldn't get in a jet once every 2 weeks and come and do a promo and leave. I mean, we're not asking him to wrestle on TV. And look, he's put in a shift. I'm not saying he hasn't. And, you know, maybe there's more we don't know. But I just think if he was around a little bit more, Because you don't think that before SmackDown in the first half of 2023, it was like a must-see show. It was destination.
Yeah, or even when he first became the Tribal Chief, it was. And you had Sasha and Bayley against each other. And it was like, for 2 hours, that was two huge stories that you just had to put some pieces around. And they had like Sami Zayn, you know what I mean? Like, it was a great show.
Whereas now it's like, I mean, in your mind, did you feel it from maybe, say, October to December? Did SmackDown feel as must-see to you as it did 6 months before?
No, I didn't see every single one, no doubt.
Well, there you go.
I looked at highlights when I've got to be honest, when I work on Saturdays with the Mail and I'm covering football, the first thing I do is whack on SmackDown mostly, right? And I was intrigued by LA Knight and Roman Reigns, but again, that's not every week. So if I don't have to work on the Saturday. Sometimes I think, oh, I'll just read what happened and watch the YouTube, you know, whatever. But there was a time where I had to watch it. You know, there's been times where I've had to stay up, right? Where I'm like, I need to, you know, I might as well see this out. But yeah, again, if we're going back to, you know, Roman Reigns and his story, end of the day, they've paid him for the dates that he's got. We've had this conversation with Brock Lesnar down the years. And I was the biggest moaner about Brock Lesnar being on top when he was hardly ever there. We're doing it again.
What element of your opinion on this would you say is based more overwhelmingly on your love of The Rock than the situation itself?
I still think if it was the biggest match you could do, like I just can't think of a wrestler that I if it's going to pay me to say it. If Goldberg was the biggest money match there was, I would still find it hard to argue against it. Yeah. In this instance, I still think that this is one of the most hotly anticipated and sensical stories they've got.
I don't disagree with any of that. I think you're totally right. I think the only thing that's given me a slight headache about it is that from last year, I don't think a lot of it was great in the second half of the year. And I think that's my worry, is that if we go back to that, because I just want there to be a good follow-up. And
I hope what comes out of it is Solo Sikoa has like a emerging part. Like, I assume that it's all about, you know, if it is going to be all in family, we're probably going to get Rikishi come out 1 week and shit and get the Usos together and all of this. Yeah, I did it for The Rock. All of that good stuff. And I think once you get like the whole family element, what is quite important to do within all of this is Solo's rise. Because I do think that will be him getting a win over Roman at some stage is going to be the jettison to the big time for him, right? He's playing his role. He has been kept quite strong. Doesn't lose that often. You know, and he's got big wins to his name. I think that would be like a big thing where Rock and Roman could say, yeah, we did our business, but we also made Solo. And then like if the Usos deliver a great match together at Mania or come back together, I don't know, whatever they do, it would then be hard to argue that it wasn't worth their while if you set up something moving past that with the bloodline. I do agree with you the bloodline is fragmented as fuck at the moment, and it's very hard to see that picture that I'm trying to paint. But I do think the potential is there with the story and the characters in play. You've got Heyman in the mix there too. I've got to say, I'm surprised as a fellow guy like me who loves the story element of wrestling and the entertainment that you're not more on board.
I think it's only because I think that what's been so refreshing the last couple of years is that we had kind of left that Vince thing of like always going back to the old guys. Like, we kind of left that, and it felt quite nice.
Stone Cold was pretty successful.
But even though Stone Cold wasn't in the world title match against Roman Reigns, he was in a, you know, it was a thing designated to its own part of the show, which was great.
But it didn't
have any bearing. Like, Kevin Owens before or after, it wasn't going to make a difference. It was just about that one thing. So I think that's the difference with this. I like a lot of the people on the show. And this is not me saying, oh, they shouldn't do it, or that, you know, it's just more, you know, with Cody Rhodes, you've got to come up with good stuff for him. So, I mean, maybe that leads us into the WrestleMania card, because...
Yeah?
What did he do with Cody Rhodes if he's not in this match?
Can I just say, before we do move into that yes. Little known fact, which I think was lost in the news yesterday, is there was another man appointed to the TKO board of directors alongside The Rock, Brad Keywell. I think that probably slipped through a lot of people's minds. He founded Groupon. There you go. He's on there now.
Well, he was usurped by Rock. Also, I mean, do you know what often really
another man beaten by The Rock.
What often makes me laugh about The Rock, because The Rock is such a, you know, affable, nice guy. He seems just really nice. Which, you know, is interesting that he's now the head of a company that heads up UFC that's got a fighter just being openly transphobic and homophobic, and Dana White just saying fighters allowed to say what they want.
Sean Strickland. But yeah.
You know, that's another story. But like, he was on one of these, like, I think it was like a CNBC thing or whatever yesterday with Ari Emanuel. And he's in this like turtleneck with a leather jacket. And he just looks the size of like a country.
Yeah, he does, doesn't he? He's in a wardrobe.
But he's trying, you know, but I guess if you're the Rock size, how do you dress and not look huge? But his outfit made me laugh. But anyway, yeah, so the card.
Cody. The card. Let's move back to that. I, again, me and Kenny have been going back and forth. It was only a few days ago we were talking about, is Seth Rollins going to be ready to face CM Punk? Well, it seems like we don't have to worry about that. We have seen different various reports today that, or Seth Rollins in an interview, in fact, says that he hopes to be wrestling again within a month. And he doesn't believe, or at least he hopes, that WrestleMania will not be his first match back from injury. So there's hope there with what Seth Rollins is going to do post MCL problems. But it's not CM Punk or Cody Rhodes, who were talking about winning the Rumble this Monday, who are allegedly going to win the Rumble. According to Sports Illustrated, it's going to be CM Punk versus Cody Rhodes at WrestleMania. And Royal Rumble winner Gunther is going to face Seth Rollins for the world title and presumably beat him. Multiple sources have told Sports Illustrated that Triple H has indicated Cody Rhodes will not headline this year's WrestleMania, nor will he finish the story at WrestleMania. Now, that's twofold then in that, Kenny, that CM Punk Cody won't main event one of the nights. So that's not only an impact on Cody not getting his spot and shot at the world title and finishing that story that everyone has come to hate the phrase, I'm sure they have. But CM Punk doesn't get his return WrestleMania main event either.
Yeah, it's a lot of stuff. But I guess the thing is, it's like, for every bit of the domino that you put that is good for somebody, it hurts somebody else. So like, for Seth Rollins, it would be much bigger for him to be in a match with CM Punk than Gunther. But for Gunther, it's much better to be in a match with Seth Rollins than, you know, do something else. But I think the thing I think is one of the most important things they have to just take care of with this card is Cody, because they put so much stock into the story, they put so much stock in, and they're so hot right now that what you don't want, and I don't think this is it, but you don't want to turn people away. You don't want to have people who've been really invested and then they don't feel like they've got something out of it. So to me, if you were to sit me down and say, right, Kenny, you've got the book in WWE, we need to do Rock and Roman, what do we do with Cody? and I had no restraints, Punk would be the pick. Because that would be
I mean,
the
it's
best
a
one.
great matchup on paper. That is undeniable. No, no matter how you chalk it up, CM Punk versus Cody is a big attraction. To say it won't main event, though, my issue with this is what will. Now, presumably, Gunther and Seth is a candidate for that if you're trying to truly anoint Gunther. Or we don't know what one half of the women's picture looks like right now. You know, is Io going to be champion? Bailey, all of that fallout. Who's going to win that Rumble? But what one thing we are quite confident in is Becky and Rhea. Now, that is a big time, first time matchup.
Yeah.
Is it a main event?
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
It's difficult to say what's the main event now because we could sit here like we could sit here with a card on paper and go, this is the main event, this isn't. But as we know, execution's everything.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I remember a couple of years ago when, I mean, if we'd been told that Ronda and Charlotte were going to face off at WrestleMania, you'd be like, oh, that's going to be great. And it was not great at WrestleMania 38 when it happened. So I think that Gunther and Seth, if that is the match, is in contention. I think Becky and Rhea's in contention. I mean, the thing is, though, I don't think they would put Becky and Rhea and Seth and Gunther and Cody and Punk all on the one night.
Mm.
So are they putting Cody and Punk on night two? And that's why, you know, Triple H is so sure it's not going to main event. I wonder if that changes.
Well, you just said as well, execution's everything. The
yes.
Tag match main evented night one last year. And that was a perfect example of it was the hottest story.
And it wasn't the plan.
No, it wasn't the plan, but it was the hottest story and it had the talent to execute, right?
Yeah.
Now, I think from interviewing her before the show that Charlotte was under the impression it might be her, that her and Rhea, which by the way was an absolute banger that same night, I think she might have been under the impression that she was going to main event too. And of course, that didn't come to pass. So you have to wonder at what point things started to swell. You know, Brock Lesnar opened night two last year. It is all about what is the hottest coming into the show. And often it's not like, I mean, to be fair, like Bianca and Sasha, the build to that wasn't great either. So we started to worry. I don't know if you recall this, but there was a bit of a like, oh no, is that going to main event? So it is all about what WWE do with it, to be honest.
Yeah. And it's, I think the thing with Cody and Punk, again, it's one of those things where, like you say, Punk's just back. I mean, you've got to assume that conversations have happened and that, you know, everybody's on board with the idea.
Well, yeah, that's what I was about to say to you. What about Punk? Like, has Punk been promised the main event and then within, what, like a month or two, he's out? Like, what's happened there?
I mean, it's crazy because we watched Raw on Monday, that amazing segment with Cody Rhodes and CM
so
Punk.
Good.
And
so
then, but like, and I think in my mind and in everyone else's mind, we're like, oh, well, you know, one of these two is winning the Rumble. So that, and now it's like, well, neither of them are winning it. So I guess execution again comes down to it. I think the good thing about this, if I try and be positive, is that, you know, there is the rest of the year. And to just have everything be on WrestleMania is, you know, they should make SummerSlam feel bigger. They should make other shows feel bigger. So, you know, Punk can headline other shows. I mean,
yeah, but he wants Mania, doesn't he?
But then, I mean, look, we sign a multi-year deal. He can main event the following. Because after Rock, and I know people have said this in the past, but after Rock, there isn't anybody else to come back and be in the world title match.
No.
Everybody, you know, Cena's not come back to be in the world title match because as much as, do you know, that's another conversation. I'm not going to go into it. Well, I'll go into it very quickly. So I have this thing, right, where I think John Cena was a massive star. one of the biggest stars they ever had, right? I don't think he was a particularly great wrestler.
No, nor do I.
That's just my opinion.
And I mean, the other, not that he hasn't had good matches, by the way.
Yeah, you know, he's had great matches.
Yeah,
but like I put a thing up, but it was like a thing about, you know, who's the best talker in ring, all these different things. It was like Roman, Cena, whatever, and I kind of put Cena like number three or four of whatever the list was. Oh no, it was talker. It was like promo, and I put Cena behind Hogan only because I think Hogan in his time talked more people in than Cena did. Not that I think his style was good in the day, and all these people were like, Cena's one of the best wrestlers, like a lot of people. And I was like, do people think he was? And because when I was on YouTube earlier today, I stuck on like a Rumble marathon thing they've got on just now.
Yeah.
And it was like Cena and Orton from 2014. And Cena does like a move while the referee's clearly been knocked down and he can see it. And he does the move and there's nobody to count. And he just goes like, like as if like, I'm so shocked. There's no referee. It's like, you're not a pantomime dame, John.
But anyway,
the original point, I don't think there's anybody else after this year that can come back into the world title match. So we shouldn't have, in theory, that problem next year. But I do think it's weird to just not even give Punk and Cody the option that they could be the main event at night one, because I think that should be on the table. But I mean,
I can't think of a stronger match right now from what we know or what we're thinking. I mean, we don't know. I mean, my wheels are really spinning about Cena and what you've said about him now. But I mean, I think, you know, what is Lesnar going to do? A lot of people were saying, oh, maybe he could get Gunther and, you know, all of this stuff. If you take all the players off the table that we've already talked about, that's Roman, that's Rock, that's Punk, that's Cody, Gunther, Seth.
Yeah.
There aren't a lot of options left. For Brock, I still, and I pitched this not long ago, and I actually think it would be great, is Brock Lesnar and Logan Paul. I really think that could be great. just because people would love to see Brock fuck up Logan Paul, right? Like that, yeah. I could definitely see that out of the options that we've got left.
Do you know that there is something that Finn Martin had said on a podcast with me, and this was a couple of months ago now, but ever since he said it, it's just stuck in my head. As something that I think could be a great idea, again, if they executed well. And he kind of talked about the idea of basically Paul Heyman bringing Brock into the bloodline. And sort of being like, you know, Brock's struggled on his own, you know, and use that as part of the story and have him kind of in the group and, you know, build to different stuff. And I think doing something wacky like that could be good for the bloodline because they are a bit stale.
Is he there enough, though, to make that work?
Well, I assume he would need to, if they were going to do it, he would need to sort of put in a commitment of, like, say it's 3 months.
Like Road to Mania, right?
Like, so if it's now till Mania, whatever it is, and then maybe it's him and, you know, whatever you do, I think there is something in that, because if it's not Brock and Gunther, I mean, Brock and Logan Paul does sound very fun. Outside of that, I don't really know who. And who is Brock Lesnar? Are we going to end up with another kind of Omas-like match this year?
Who else is what I mean? 2 years in a row, we don't really have anything for him. That's not, you know, he's still a big star. Like, unless you, I don't know, you're trying to make someone against him, like an Austin Theory or something, but I mean.
You could do, I mean, this is not that exciting, I'm not saying it, but I mean, maybe a heel Brock against Randy Orton, since he's so hot right now.
Yeah. You know what? I want to say this while it's on my mind, because I haven't been able to shake the John Cena conversation, because I'm totally in agreement with you. I feel like you get a lot of people that, you know, maybe don't understand the criteria. There are so many wrestlers, like well-respected ones, that have talked about how John Cena is like clunky and difficult in the ring. Like, as far as the actual art of professional wrestling goes, you know, he's got all the charisma in the world and all that stuff. But to say, like, he's a great wrestler. Conversely, they all say the opposite about Randy Orton. There is not one professional wrestler that you admire who doesn't think Randy Orton's like the best in the world today, right? And that doesn't mean he does shooting stars and, you know, all of these eccentric things, and he dazzles you with all of these, you know, incredible sequences. He's just fucking excellent at like positioning, reactions, the facials, the timing, all of that stuff that I suppose the, you know, quote-unquote untrained eye common fan wouldn't notice that he's excellent at. I think the opposite works for Cena. People don't realise that he's sometimes the amazing dance partners maybe have helped make the matches what they are, but he brings the stardust that makes them go the extra mile. You understand? That's my point on that one. But I can't even remember what the original conversation was. Brock Lesnar. I'm looking up and down the roster. I mean, unless I don't know what Sammy and KO are going to be up to.
I mean,
there could be something there, or do you finally get Stone Cold? I'm just literally spitballing. I'm not saying you should, but there aren't many obvious paths. I mean, I actually wouldn't mind seeing Drew and Brock do a real match, because I feel like when Drew dethroned him, that was just bollocks, really. The finisher fest, and then it's over.
I quite like the idea. I mean, they've not done this in years. I don't know if they have done it and I've forgotten, but I actually like the idea of something with, like, say, Brock and Drew, and it's like, it's for the next title shot. It's for the next.
I mean, they should do that, really. Like, we haven't had that at Mania. When you think, they took away the Money in the Bank concept, that was obviously one of the pulls of it being at Mania originally, right? But I would like that, where they set up the next thing.
Because it just gives you something where, like, so say it was Brock and Drew as an example, and I think that would be a really good match. But, like, if you have a title shot at stake, that automatically...
Well, it needs some extra juice. Yeah. But, I mean, and also, like, Brock going after Drew, I don't know who's who right now. They're both kind of heels. I don't know. It's clunky. But I look at that card, or the leaked card, and I do have questions that we've all, we've discussed here. I'm not sure. I mean, obviously, you've got Judgment Day as well, where they need to be factored in fairly heavily. Priest is obviously... Priest has got to give up the briefcase in the next few months. Finn probably needs a big match. Dom needs a big match. But who do you put him up against that... Ray as well. Like, what's going on there? Presumably Ray and Santos Escobar, I presume? I don't know.
I mean, I think Priest and Balor as the tag champs in a tag title match would probably be better, because I just don't think Priest is going to be in a big singles match.
Against whom, though? Profits, I guess, the rebranded Profits, and then...
I mean, let's be honest, it's probably going to end up being... I mean, who would I like it to be, like, in a fantasy world, or am I living on planet Earth?
I'm open to both.
I mean, if it was fantasy world, I'd love them to build up Chad and Otis for it.
Oh, me too.
Like, I'd love if they just really put the rocket behind them and did that. Because I think people would, if you can get that going, people would be so behind them at the show. And, and that could be fun. But, I mean, people, the Priest briefcase thing is interesting, because he's got until July. It just feels like he's had it forever.
Yeah, and not really done much with it. Like, no, there was that original tension with Finn that went fucking nowhere. And then, let me say this before we move on to Nick Aldis, because I'm conscious we have been speaking a little bit.
Yeah.
Does Gunther really need to win the world title at WrestleMania? Is he that kind of guy who's going to be the next guy? He's a great wrestler. Great wrestler. His CV of matches in WWE is stupid. Like, I might argue it's better than anyone's in terms of, his classic two-match ratio is really, really high. Is he the next sort of babyface star? No? It's rare, or, seldom does it happen that you anoint the next sort of monster heel world champion at WrestleMania. Is that something that needs to happen here? Because it's... If he goes there as undefeated Intercontinental... He's undefeated on the main roster, right? Undefeated Intercontinental champion, merges the belts, double champ. Christ. Like, that is top of the card. I mean, and then what? The only thing you can really do from there is challenge whoever's the winner out of Rock and Roman, right? Like, and he is just the guy from then. And I'm not against it in terms of match quality. I'm just spitballing. Does Mania need to be built around his anointment? That fit to me, I would argue it could be another show.
I mean, if he wins the Rumble, then it has to
happen. It has to be. But
if he doesn't,
I'm just arguing about the whole process. Like, is that what we should be doing?
The issue I think that they've got, and I don't know how they're gonna figure it out, is that no matter what way you sit down and go, this should be who wins the Rumble, this should be what the card is at WrestleMania, this should be this, there's like a couple of key players who kind of get shafted somehow. you know, like if it's Rollins and Gunther, I mean, well, Rollins was going to get the Punk match, so that's not really great for him. If it, like I say, if it's Punk and Cody, neither of them get the main event. What does Lesnar do if Gunther's not available for him? Because we thought that might be the match.
Well, like, to me, that's a better match for him than winning the world title off Rollins. I know that sounds stupid, but I think it is.
But then that puts Rollins back with Punk, and then that gives Cody nothing to do.
Yeah, I see the dilemma. But
so
again,
then it's like, it's these jigsaw
pieces. Somebody has to lose, is what you're saying. I get it, but like...
Somebody has to not be shining at WrestleMania this year, and it's... I guess it's who you choose to do that with. And I don't really know what the answer is, because none of Gunther, Cody, Rollins and Punk feel that they should be people who are not in prime big matches.
Yeah, and it seems like WWE are going to resist the temptation to do triple threat or four-way or anything like that. You know,
I mean, because last year Gunther, they kind of bucked the trend, because usually triple threat matches and four-ways are not memorable, but I mean, that drew Shane's,
so good.
It was phenomenal. So, should we very quickly mention Netflix Raw before we go to next?
I mean, you've said it. No, I mean, yeah, we're looking at basic. I mean, Netflix from January 2025, the US, Canada, Latin America, and the UK. That is where you will find Raw. I think Tony Khan, not Tony Khan, fuck me.
Nick Khan
has suggested that it is Monday Night Raw for now. Not that it's not open to changing that day, but yes, obviously it will be Netflix heading in a slightly different direction with a live option each week. No adverts, which is, oh my God. Like, if you watch those old Raws in like 99, where they have like an ad every half an hour, it's fucking bliss. So there's a lot on the table, and it could be, it's a 10-year deal essentially, but at 5 years, Netflix can opt out, or they can choose to extend it to another 10 years. So plenty of options there. WWE set to make ridiculous money, Kenny. Am I right? The figure is about $5 billion. Is that what I read?
Yeah, each year they're going to make $500 million in the deal.
Mental.
But I mean, that is going to include eventually the international rights, because for us in the UK, finally, we're getting a better deal than the US. Finally, you know, we're going to be getting everything on the network or on Netflix. And I think the plan is eventually there'll be no network because it'll all be on Netflix. But
well, it's obsolete, right? Like I was thinking this, so they, you know, okay, all their archive stuff is, you know, I like it. And even the original docs have slowed down now because they have them on Peacock. So we don't even really get them here.
But then they've got the Vince McMahon documentary series on Netflix that's coming. So I think there will be a renewed push because, you know, Netflix are fucking great at documentaries. They just are.
Yeah.
So I think you'll see lots more stuff like that. I mean, for me, selfishly, because I cover Raw and SmackDown from 20 years ago on Patreon, it'd be good if Raw and SmackDown was still on. But in some form, which I'm sure it will be, I just don't. But I mean, it'll be interesting to see how they do it. I saw some people in the UK complaining about it, and I can't really understand why, because I pay £30 a month for TNT Sports, and I really resent paying it because I don't watch anything. I don't watch other sports. £30 a month to watch the WWE shows, and the functionality is the pits. So bring on Netflix. You know,
yeah, I'm the same really. I mean, UFC is on TNT, which I actually quite like, but.
Even if they do, like, I think I pay for the top Netflix package, which is $15.99 a month.
I do, yeah.
So say they go, you know, the WWE package will be an extra fiver, or even an extra tenner, right? If they do that, it's still going to be way cheaper than to have a £15 Netflix subscription and a £30 TNT one.
And you take away the tenner of the network.
And you take away the tenner of the network, so you're saving. Because I mean, I don't. There will be people listening to this, I'm sure. Well, I'm not sure, actually. That's my point. I am sure, right, that the majority of people that we know in our lives have Netflix in some form. So I don't buy the idea of like, oh, I'm going to have to get Netflix now. Well, you fucking should get Netflix.
Yeah, what are you doing?
Like, you've been missing out. Like, do you know about a good true crime documentaries that are on Netflix?
Sensational.
Anyway. Yeah, so I think it's a great deal. And Kendi's complaining about it, she's sharp. to be brutally honest.
Like, turn it in, everyone.
Like, what?
Turn
like, it in. It's, that's like going, you know, here's a key to a mansion for free, and you go, no cleaner? Like, that's what, that's kind of what the, so yeah, I think it's a great move. And, you know, they're going to, because people do not watch TV the same way that they used
they
to.
I think this is similarly progressive as to when they launched the network in 2014. Like, WWE do have a habit of being ahead of the curve.
And this one, unlike the original network, is not to their financial detriment.
No, exactly. They haven't had to invest. You know, really, when you look at that now, that investment was wise to get to where they are now. And, you know, it obviously, I don't know, some accounts and Dave Meltzer are going to struggle when they're like, where are the viewing numbers?
Well, it's funny you say that because I was listening to Uncle Dave today, and apparently Nielsen are going to start doing ratings for Netflix.
Of course they are.
But the difference is going to be if you get a rating, if you get told, like, Netflix, say, 4 million people watch Raw, that encompasses everybody in the world on Netflix.
Yeah, and also, like, the other thing you have to take into account of that is, like, when, because not everybody will have to watch it live on Netflix. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's the whole beauty of Netflix. So.
But it's kind of perfect for WWE because, look, we know they love a wee inflated number sometimes. So the fact that they can say 7 million people watch Raw, I mean, you know, they'll love that. So, yeah, it's a great move. It's a great week. If you're a WWE fan, it's been a great week. If you're somebody who doesn't like WWE, it's probably a tough week to stomach.
I was about to say, what do you think? What do you think Tony Khan's making of all of this right now?
I mean, given that tonight they're in, I can't remember which city they're in, but I think tonight the last check on WrestleTix, they'd sold 1,800 tickets for Dynamite.
Yeah.
I mean, to me, though, the thing is, and I've always said this, and it's just the way I watch wrestling, but I think it is kind of the way that most people consume it, is that people like hot angles and stars. But that is what they like. And I think that the problem with AEW is the wrestling is great. If you want to watch really good wrestling, AEW has tons of it, but they don't have a lot of stars that people are invested in or programs that they're invested in. So I think that's why people aren't going to the shows. Like, I mean, for example,
They had them.
But I mean, so for example, and I'll shut up after this because I know I'm going on, but like Collision, right, as an example. So I was listening to Meltzer and Alvarez talk about Collision, and I cover Collision with Sondra. It irritates me that I have to watch it because there's two things that tend to happen in Collision. One, top name against mid-card name that we know the top name is going to win. So like Adam Copeland and Dante Martin, or John Moxley and Shane Taylor. And then the feud that's on Collision, is the House of Black against FTR and Daniel Garcia, and it's not really that meaty of a feud. It's just kind of, they're fighting, right? But if you go to a live Collision show, apparently they tape like 10 Ring of Honor matches between like before and after the show. So like, if you're somebody who's going to a Collision show and you are there and like the Collision is just kind of okay, because also they don't tell you in advance who's going to be at Collision most of the time, and you kind of just have to kind of figure it out. So you don't really know who's going to be there. They do loads of Ring of Honor. Like, you're not going to go back. So I think that they need to get a bit better with, you know, WWE have all, I mean, like, for example, the SmackDown after WrestleMania in Orlando, I think it was, they'd advertised the dark match was going to be Nakamura against Ziggler.
Yeah, I was there, yeah.
So, like, when we were in the arena, we're like, oh, fuck yeah, we'll stick around for that. But I think they just need to get better at it. I mean, if Tony Khan could take his Twitter persona and just turn that guy into a character on TV, like, that would probably be one of the best parts of the show because it's characters. So, but yeah, I mean, I think they've got Mercedes, though. See, apparently.
I mean, it's hard to say until the Rumble passes.
Yeah, that I think until the Rumble passes, people will still be like, I'll just wait to see.
I certainly, for the record, wouldn't commit to where she is right now. I wouldn't put money down on it.
And also, I mean, can you imagine if Sasha turns up at the Rumble, you're like, oh my God, there's more people not going to be in the Mania card.
I mean, to be fair, AEW for like 2 or 3 years was my favorite show.
Oh, same.
Dynamite was. You know, this is when the Elite, and obviously you had the Kenny and Hangman Page was on the Ascend, and then Danielson joined, and I was like, wow, and Adam Cole joined, and it was all great, and MJF was on the rise. And then, you know, you take MJF out, you lose a couple of those, like Kenny and the Bucks, and they're meandering around, and Cody leaves, and Hamang Page loses a bit of pace. I mean, I like what him and Swerve have done together, to be fair. But outside of that, you know, like the Acclaimed were red hot at one point, and like now they're just kind of like, eh. It's they have cooled off significantly, and WWE running parallel have heated up massively with the Bloodline, you know, and everything around that, like that time frame. And you, it's palpable, tangible, the change, right? Yeah. Between the two and how they've switched places. I really do hope that AEW get it back, because it is a show, Dynamite, that I have historically enjoyed greatly, but they're not in their best spot right now.
Yeah, it needs to be hotter, and you know, I think those. The tough thing is when you've been really, really hot and then you're not, it's harder to get it back. But it's not impossible, and they've got loads of talent, they've got loads of goodwill, and yeah, I
think he would have thought the devil was his hot angle. I think Tony Khan will have thought that this is the hot angle too. And it was, you know, to be fair, it wasn't the worst played off, but I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, their issue is that WWE, it's like, I remember Jim Cornette had said about the Attitude Era, because somebody was like, you know, the Attitude Era was so hot, and he was like, yeah, they could have fucked a donkey in the ring, people would have bought a ticket for it.
Yeah, yeah.
And like, that's kind of where WWE are right now. So, and but also at that point, the big difference between now and then is that WWE are doing really good stuff. You know, you've not got the Vince Russo type stuff happening. So, yeah, it's a good week for wrestling fans, and I think it's good overall. So,
who would have thunk it? Two break it downs.
And there'll be a third next week.
There's going to be a third inside 7 days. That's fucking mental.
I know. They will take a month off.
Yeah, exactly, to just recover.
Too much.
Nick Aldis is going to close the show. By the way, just a quick word for him. He's settled in great in WWE, I think.
How good he would be?
I was about to say, those of you familiar with Magnus and then, you know, his NWA run will not be surprised about how good Nick Aldis has fitted in. But it does make me happy to see the love for him on social media. You know, how he's slotted into that role and rubbed shoulders with the Elite very, very seamlessly. So that's cool. And we get into all of that here shortly.
Make me a bet here.
Go on.
When do you think Nick Aldis has his first match in WWE?
You know, I'll say this. I think next year or the year after is WrestleMania London. And I think he wrestles before that. The vibe I got from him is that he'd like it to be in England when he does. But I think already you're getting a bit of electricity around him. And I don't think they'll be able to hold it. So
I'm going to go, I think he's wrestled by the end of the year.
By the end of this year, for sure.
Exciting times.
And on that note, let's hear from the man. You can hear from Kenny and myself next week, post-Rumble. It's going to be a good one, and hopefully we'll have some good interviews off the back of that to share with you guys as well. Until then, you know to hit the YouTube and make sure you catch all of the interviews we've been up to and some live clips from Kenneth in action. But until then, here's Nick Aldis.
Nick, how are you, man?
I'm good. Good to see you again.
Yeah, I made sure I was on time today. I was like, I'm not going to be late for Nick again. No, I'm at work. You can see me, man. No kids are holding me back now, Nick. We're all good. Man, it's been a delight to see you on weekly TV, WWE, man. Felt like a long time coming my perspective. Now that we are here, though, how much have you been enjoying this run thus far? Because I'm sure, I mean, maybe 10 years ago, you were thinking, I'm going to get there and I'm going to wrestle this person, you know, whatever you might have thought. And it's been a kind of unconventional, I guess, but really entertaining start to life in WWE.
Yeah, look, I've been having a blast. You know, I think, fortunately, I've come in blessed with the gift of managed expectations. I had sort of made peace with the idea that maybe WWE was never going to be in the cards for me at all. So I certainly have come in with a level of gratitude that I perhaps wouldn't have had as a guy in his 20s. And look, I came in on a day rate, you know, to try out as a producer behind the scenes, which I again had fully made peace with the idea of, hey, if that's going to be my job, then that's going to be my job, and I'll do that job to the best of my ability, because I decided that at this point in my life and my career, I wanted to contribute to the big leagues, however that may be, because I'd put in my 10,000 hours. You know, I felt like I had done enough and had enough experience, enough expertise, you know, and my own unique sort of philosophy and my own track record of success in the wrestling business, that I, you know, at this point I was sort of, I was ready to work with the top, with the, you know, at the top level. I felt like one way or another, my skill set as a professional was best suited to be contributing to the number one company.
Yeah, I mean, it was, listen, like I say, it was overdue. But again, I mean, you're 37 now? You're not, yeah, like, you know, there's in ring years there. I know there are. How did the discussion come to pass of, hey, what about a producer? Like, is there a part of your, you know, like you said, you checked your expectations, but I guess there's a part of your ego at that point that's like, oh, this is where we are? Or, you know, talk to me about that whole development of that situation.
Yeah. So I finished up with the NWA, and at that time, that was when I had sort of, you know, really decided that if there was any kind of opportunity whatsoever with WWE, that was where I wanted to be. You know, because I had done everything. I felt like I'd done everything I could do, you know, at a place with limited resources or with, you know, with sort of limited access, and just decided, like, one way or another, I want a chance to contribute there, because when I think about things and I look at the business and I you know, philosophize about the business, I'm always thinking about WWE, right? Like, you know, doing it at the highest level. So I had, you know, I had reached out and had brief, but I felt positive conversations with Bruce Pritchard. And, you know, he sort of mentioned to me, like, hey, this was at the beginning of last year, so about a year ago, where he had, without giving too much away, as is a classic Bruce, he'd just sort of said, look, there's a lot going on at the moment, you know, on the corporate side. So, you know, let's stay in touch, but maybe go and, you know, go and get busy for a bit and, you know, circle back and let's see where things are at, you know, in a few months down the road. Obviously we later found out that that was the sale and the, you know, the TKO, you know, the TKO era coming in and everything like that. So now it makes a lot of sense. And when he did call back, he said, look, what about a producer? And he said, look, I know it's probably not what you had in mind, your first choice, but, it, you know, we believe that with your level of experience and expertise and, you know, you're articulate and you're a professional, we think that you could really be a great, you know, be a great addition to that side of things, and, you know, help a lot of the talent bring out, you know, the best of themselves. And, you know, what do you say to that? You know, I took that as a huge compliment. And I said, okay, you know, like I said, I'd sort of already made a promise to myself that whatever the opportunity was, I was going to take it. Because, you know, it's better to be in the tank than under it. And, you know, I kind of went, look, WWE are, you know, especially now with TKO and, you know, where things are at. I mean, the business that, you know, that we're doing now and everything, it's just, you know, I wanted to be part of it. I wanted to plug into that energy source, and it's an amazing time to be part of the WWE. And yeah, like I said, it started off very, you know, no promises, no expectations. I was just on a day rate for the first couple of months. I was just learning how things work, and trust me, it takes months to even just to familiarize yourself with the WWE way of doing things, just the scale of the operation, you know, just the hundreds and hundreds of people involved every single week in making these live broadcasts happen. And, you know, you talk to people in television production and they'll all say that, whether they're wrestling fans or not, they'll just, you know, they marvel at WWE's level of television production, you know, for a lot, like to, you know, to put out, you know, 7 hours a week of live broadcast at that quality, you know, it takes a huge team, and it takes the very best in the business at what they do, you know, all the way down the line. And, you know, that's been one of the most fascinating and exciting parts of that particular role, you know, because I'm very fortunate, because I spent a long time trying to get one job with WWE, and now I have two. On that particular job, you know, it's exhilarating and it's terrifying at the same time, and it's exciting, you know, but it's just understanding, like, God, there are so many people involved in this and so many moving parts, and just understanding how to, you know, how to be efficient and effective in your particular role, and how to communicate. That's the biggest thing about that particular job, is the communication side of it, and, you know, understanding who does what. And it's like in WWE, there is an elite level expert at every single job, you know. There's very few instances in WWE where there's sort of one guy who wears multiple hats. Like in WWE, there's one guy who does one thing, and he's the best in the business at doing that one thing, and when you need something about that, you go to him or her. And that's what separates WWE from everywhere else. It's like, you know, it's like being the, you know, it's like being in the Navy SEALs, or, you know, the, you know, the Royal Marines or something. It's like you are expected to deliver at a very, very high standard. If you get one job, like, you have to do that job immaculately well.
Well, it was suggested to me that you've done that thus far. How does, you know, we'll get to the interactions on TV and the, you know, how well they've been received, and they have. But how do they then say, okay, well, now we want you to be the GM as well? Like, it's quite a quick promotion, man. Like, 2 months in.
Yeah. So, look, I like I said, I had no expectations. I had no idea whether or not Hunter, you know, had any idea like who I was or what I had done, or what I was capable of doing, you know, and why would he, right? Like, so he's got a lot going on. So I think it was in Hershey. We had SmackDown in Hershey, Pennsylvania. I remember that, because it was the night that Cena came back. And we were in the production meeting, and Bruce Pritchard pulled me out of the meeting and asked me how I was feeling physically, and, you know, he said, because we have an idea for you for a character. And I was, okay. And that was that. They didn't mention anything more about it for a few weeks. I suppose at that point I started thinking logically about, like, well, it could be, you know, it's either going to be something like a general manager, like the, you know, an authority figure, or it's going to be some completely new, you know, idea. But, you know, but either way, like I the way it had been articulated to me, I sort of pieced together, like, okay, I could, you know, I feel like it's going to be something along those lines. So I started sort of preparing, you know, for that. And then a few weeks later, he called again and said, the SmackDown general manager. And I was like, yes, please. Where do I sign? and, you know, it was very, very, it was a very easy deal to get done. I loved the prospect. You know, I remember getting off the phone and talking to Mickey about it right away, and she was just like, "Oh my God, yes! Like, you'll be great at that." Mm. And so, look, it's like anything else. It's, you know, a spot like that, it comes down to two things. Obviously, it's only as good as what you're given, right? To, you know, in terms of TV time. But the other, you know, and it's only as good as you make it. And for both of those things, I've been very blessed that they've given me some good opportunities to show what I can do. And I feel like I've delivered the character in a way that's sort of different. There's been some really great authority figures over the years. You know, I get so many Teddy Long tweets and Instagram, you know, comments and stuff. I love Teddy, and Teddy has always been actually a big advocate for me. Like, I've heard him say multiple times that he thought I should be in WWE and stuff like that. So I love Teddy for that. But you know, I think the ones who people remember are all the ones who sort of made it their own. You know, who sort of did it in their own unique way. Bischoff, Teddy, Stephanie. So, you know, and I just looked at it and went, okay, I think I have a way to, you know, I had a sort of a vision of what this character could be. And that's what you're starting to see now on TV.
Yeah, I thought the interaction with you and Roman backstage was excellent for telling everybody what you're about. And, you know, dare I use the word, between you, there was that electricity, right, where you don't back down. He kind of stares at you and it's like, you know, there's that impasse. And then obviously we've seen the development last week where you've got him in the four-way now. Did you and those backstage, have you felt that promising chemistry between you and Roman? Whether that results in something in the ring, I know I'd like to see that. But even just from a character standpoint, clearly there's something there.
Short answer, yes. Yes. Yeah, it was... You look, I would add to that. I feel like there's a strong chemistry between me and Paul Heyman also, you know.
I agree.
That's the extra element to that particular story arc that's really unique and interesting, because he's such a, you know, as much as he and I will butt heads on television, I will say, you know, as Nick Aldis, the producer, Nick Aldis, the studier of sports entertainment, that for that particular, you know, that particular character, that particular set of skills, you know, Paul Heyman is probably the best person to study. You know, he's probably the best in his best to ever do it. And I've always felt like Paul, Bobby Heenan and Jim Cornette are the three most talented extemporaneous speakers in the history of the business. And I certainly, you know, do my best. Like, the way I look at it is, you know, I always believed in a rising tide lifting all boats. So for me, it's like if I have television time with Paul Heyman, my job is to hang, you know. My job is to no matter what, I have to make sure that I am perceived as comparable, right, as a character, as you know. And my thought on that is that, well, if I can hang with Heyman, right, then I can, and then if I can hang with Roman, Now I have a certain level of status with all the superstars, because obviously Roman's status is a class by himself, you know, as a character. So that, yes, that interaction was very important for, you know, my character development, no doubt.
Yeah. And, you know, again, it's been a great job so far. You did an amazing job with NWA as well. You put them on your back. Gave them the best years in recent memory, in my opinion. So I think you've got a lot of due and a lot of credit with a lot of wrestling fans because of that. How cool is it to be in WWE? And you said it earlier, John Cena rolls into town, you know, people that you might not have had much interaction with before, but you get to interact with for the first time. The Rock was in the house last week. Like, are these people you were able to even get, you know, a quick hello and a quick meet with? And, you know, how
Rock,
cool
Rock
was that?
Rock is like my white whale at the moment. The last two times he's been at TV, I haven't been there.
Uh-huh.
And I've started going like, is he, you know, is this a rib? Like, am I like, what's going on here? Like, every time I'm not there, like, so he's sort of my white whale, which is funny because he's probably the, you know, of everybody, he's probably the guy who made me want to get into the business more than anyone else at that time, you know, and then along with Brett and a few others. But so look, yeah, what a time to be part of WWE. You know, such a stacked main event scene, mm-hmm. Such an abundance of potential big money matches on the horizon for 2024 and 2025. I mean, honestly, like when you go through the list of names that we have ready to, you know, who are box office. Right. If to do it all, to do all these different particular matches and do them justice, you're already planning into 2025.
I agree.
You know, which is a wonderful predicament to be in for Paul and for, you know, the rest of the team, you know, Michael Hayes and to a lesser extent, yeah, myself, like, and the guys who are involved in that process, you know, as well. Cena was in the house for my on-screen debut, and he was very kind, you know, and you know, he came and said, you know, congratulations on the gig, you know, it's a long time coming. And complimenting me on the zinger I got in on Dom. There he goes, man. The timing on that was like pitch perfect. That was a great line. And, you know, so I told him I appreciate it. And, you know, so yeah, look, to sort of feedback nods, you know, from guys like that. And obviously to work directly with Hunter on things is, you know, a dream come true. And, you know, and going back to the interaction with Roman, to be given the opportunity to so early on in my WWE career to be presented in that way with Roman, you know, to be presented as a sort of as an equal in terms of status,
yeah,
is that's not lost on me. You know, and look, I made my on-screen debut as part of Triple H's in-ring promo. You know, so like, yeah, there's not a lot that I can. There's no complaints, no complaints on my end.
Here's one that is going to spiral off into a few questions, but I'll try and keep it as compact as I can. One, is the door not shut on in-ring from you or WWE?
Not from me, for sure. You know, anything is possible in the WWE. Look, I know that, again, I deeply appreciate all of the fans, you know, who keep me alive in that regard. You know, who want to see me in the ring with this person or that person. And obviously since my interaction with Roman have, you know, that's started a whole sort of different conversation in that regard. And I'm just grateful that there's an interest in it. At the same time, I'm fully committed to being the best general manager of all time, you know? Mm-hmm. So like it, I'll cross that bridge if I come to it.
Cool. Let's you mentioned the word dreams earlier, so let's touch on to that. If there were some, I'm going to assume you'd like to step into WrestleMania before your career is done. And also, there's a lot of WWE shows on our shores now, Nick. I know you're a US resident, but I'm going to call them our shores.
Yes.
you can't tell me you don't dream of being in a WWE ring in front of a British crowd. I mean, listen, TNA had a hotbed in Britain that I know you've got to enjoy, but listen, I was at Money in the Bank last year. I was at Clash at the Castle. You need to be in front of a crowd like that.
Well, I appreciate you saying that. I watched Money in the Bank. I particularly remember John Cena coming out and saying that we needed a WrestleMania to take place in London. And I will say this, if that were to happen, which it will, I'm very confident of that. I don't have any intel on it, but you don't say something like that without there being intention.
Agreed.
If that were to happen, I would certainly do everything I could to be a good fit for that show. You know, and I would hope that, again, it all comes down to timing and opportunity and what the fans want to see. If the fans want to see it and the opportunity is there and it's good for business, never say never.
Two birds, one stone. There it is. Mania, England, Nick Aldis. Thank you very much. Nick, I think you're doing great, man. Thank you very much for taking the time to speak to the Daily Mail today. I look forward to doing it again sometime, man.
Alex, appreciate it.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.